Warning, the podcast Under the Stairs is not safe for work. We'll feature movie spoilers and language which most listeners may find offensive. Brought to you in conjunction with Legion Podcast Network. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is bonus episode number 77. I'm your host Duncan McLeish and welcome to the show. On bonus episode 77, it is Challenge Teapots April 2018. This is Movie Club and it is your reviews, listener reviews. The challenge I set about a month ago now was linked directly to the upcoming Baz v the Masters of Horror episode, where the Baz will face down the three directorial works of Clive Barker, acclaimed author, filmmaker, artist, sculptor, just all round the boss. So yeah, that's what we did. We decided to put a slight twist in it though, and what I asked for you, ladies and gentlemen, to do was very simply pick a piece of work in movie form that was written but not directed by Clive Barker. I think the list was about 7 or 8 movies in total that you had to choose from, and I didn't care if you went for good or bad as long as you picked one and justified your review. We didn't get the usual swarm of people submitting at the last minute. That being said, the quality of the reviews are of a very high standard, as always on Podcasts Under the Stairs when we do these listener review episodes. So I look forward to getting into them after the first break. But before we get to that, as always, we have some updates as pertains to upcoming Podcasts Under the Stairs episodes. The first one is that, like I said, back on Monday's In Reverence episode, this is a 3-episode week. This will be our second episode of the week, this bonus episode. The third one will drop on Sunday. It's another bonus episode and it's looking at A Quiet Place. There will be a non-spoiler and spoiler review of that movie. Then the following day, Monday, we will be doing a little review of Baskin, myself and the fantastic Liam from Scotland, Liam versus Evil. We'll be sitting down and we will be doing a review on that movie, which has just seen a Blu-ray release through Severin in the UK. So we're both big fans of that movie. I only ever saw it once and it was when it came out. So I am now very keen to come back and watch it again and see where we've gone. And I think the guy's got a new film out, which is maybe doing the festival circuit at the moment. It's maybe not widely available, but I'm very much looking forward to checking that out when it arrives as well. So that will be dropping on Monday. Then the following Thursday, because the episodes just keep on coming and coming, it will be another bonus episode looking at Truth or Dare, the new Blumhouse movie, which made its way to the cinema a couple of weeks ago. I want to say it was Friday the 13th it was released. So I saw it a good couple of weeks ago now, but I want to do a review on that for balance, because I didn't particularly like that movie at all. But it'll be another non-spoiler and spoiler review. And then a week on Sunday, we will return with disc number 6 of our 88 Films Italian Collection review series, which will be Lamberto Bava's A Blade in the Dark. So yeah, tons of Teapots content. To be honest with you, the shows are just churning out at the moment at an incredible rate. And I would love to say, you know, things are going to slow down, but every time I say that and it's going to get back to a normal schedule, I find something else to podcast about. So at the moment, might as well put all that content out there. The beauty of a lot of these bonus episodes, like this one that you're about to listen to, is they are a bit shorter. So they're not the epic episodes, which you will be getting very, very soon when Baz, he's you know, versus the Master of Horror Clive Barker episode drops, which I reckon is going to top out about 3.5 hours. I say that because our Hellraiser review and introduction, which we have already recorded, is just over 1.5 hours. So do the math, ladies and gents. It's a whole hell of a lot of buzz coming up on that episode, and I reckon that'll be out in the next 2 weeks or so as well. So yeah, tons of Teapots content. Quick merch update, which I'm doing pretty much in all these episodes and will continue to do until the merch is pretty much gone. We're sitting about 25% of stock of posters. That's both the Void poster and the Baz V Horror poster, as well as 10 T-Punks pins left. So if you have been waiting to pull the trigger on that one, waiting for a payday to come in, there are 10 left, and when they're gone, they're gone. So yeah, thank you very much for everyone that has purchased one, and if you're waiting to get one, get it now. Don't delay, buy yours today. Okay, I'm going to take my first break of this episode. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear a little bit of music, because this is a Challenge Teapots episode, and when I return, we're going to be looking at your reviews of Clive Barker written but not directed movies. All that and more coming up on Challenge Teapots, April 2018, right after this.
Hey, Paul, what I was thinking is that we need to cut a promo.
Yeah, I've been working on some ideas. It's just I don't really know where to go with it exactly. What if I got like a filter where we could just kind of talk normally and we can have kind of a script, but then yes. I can like filter it so that one of us will have one kind of voice and then one will have the other.
I want to put my request. Make me as Freddy Krueger. Can you do that?
Maybe instead of the voices, what if we tried to like write a skit, develop a whole thing, and we have a backstory? But I don't know. That might be kind of too long. So
well, like screeching cars and explosions and fireworks.
Yeah. Well, what about?
I like it.
Maybe instead of doing a filter, we could just like reach out to Robert Englund himself, and maybe he can just record a promo for us sometime. Do you think? I mean, we might have to like raise some money.
We can do a Kickstarter, and we could just throw it out to like Robert Englund and just all kinds of actors, and I think people will do that.
I think.
Sure, why not?
Well, you know what? I don't know. Maybe we're overthinking this whole thing. How about if we just tell people where to find us?
I like that.
You can find us at Who Will Survive on iTunes, Stitcher, on the Legion Podcast Network, and on the Raw Live and Unedited Podcasting Network. Also on Facebook and Instagram under the same name.
Oh, wait, can we do it underwater with piranhas killing me?
That would kind of be brutal.
And if that doesn't work, then you can do the regular promo.
All right. Well, just get in the water and I'll go get some fish.
All right, cool.
We'll be right back.
and welcome back. So here we go. It's your reviews, ladies and gents. We didn't get as many as we usually do, but to be honest with you, this one maybe wasn't as straightforward. There was quite a lot of choice out there for you to choose from. I think, I put up between 7 and 8 movies to choose from. And sometimes it's better just giving one movie, because that means people can just focus on one thing rather than trying to maybe watch all movies to make a decision on. That being said, some people were off the mark super quick. The first one to come in was from David Garrett, a good friend of the show now, David Garrett Jr., who came back at us, I want to say within like 2 days of me posting the episode, which is pretty phenomenal. And he went right out for it, and he chose Rawhead Rex, which it made me smile greatly, because I do have a lot of time for that silly, silly fucking movie. So anyway, David Garrett Jr. says, "Hello again, Duncan. I was quite intrigued by this month's movie club when I saw it released. When I heard the show about the rules for this one, I knew Rawhead Rex was the film I had to choose. It gave me reason to watch it immediately. Now, I've read the story of Rawhead Rex. I don't remember a lot from it, but I do remember that I enjoyed it and the thought and idea behind it was solid. I was surprised to see that Clive Barker wrote the screenplay for the film, but now disowns it. I see that in part why he would come to this conclusion. The film is cheesy, a tad bit outrageous, but I have to admit, I kind of really liked it. You can clearly see the actor's mouth inside of the mask of Rawhead Rex, which made me laugh. Sexuality is all over this film, from the things like David Dukes and Kelly Piper say to each other, to the odd scene where the couple are making out with the brother right there. I can forget about Rawhead Rex urinating on Declan or the statue that can defeat Rawhead. There are all these things and they crack me up. What really hooked me though is the backstory to Rawhead Rex. I love the idea of a pagan deity being defeated so the church can be built over its land. To go from there, having stained glass windows that depict the creature and its defeat is something that could be seen in a remote church. I would have liked to know more about the creature personally. I think that would help make the film much better. Making Declan into his disciple was also great because of him being a priest. The corruption is interesting, and it happened so quick it makes me wonder what deep desires he was harbouring. To be critical, the acting is decent at best. I was confused as to where the locations were in relation to each other. It also has the horror film cliche that the police do not believe the kid or Howard who have seen the monster. I also don't see how Declan was brainwashed into following Rawhead after touching the altar. The item inside of it kills the monster, so I don't see how that aspect worked. The scene of him being pissed on would make more sense if he became a follower after that. Also, how does Rawhead decide who to use and who to kill? I think these being unanswered hurt the film. Now, with that being said, I had fun with this film. Don't think it's great, but I would revisit it to have some laughs again for sure. I give this one a 3.5 out of 5. Thanks again for doing these movie clubs. I have a lot of fun with them. Looking forward to what you have in store next month. David Garrett Jr. So I think this was David's first watch of this movie, and I don't think you were the only one that, well, Rawhead Rex pops up a couple of times, but I don't think you were the only one that actually watched this movie for the first time as part of this, which kind of made me smile, because like I say, this movie's a big ball of crazy, and I kind of love it because it's a big ball of crazy. It is a pretty bad movie, and I think no one's going to defend it on much accounts to do with things like acting and plot or special effects. That being said, it's the same way I have crazy love for PCs, like I said on Monday. I share a lot of that in Rawhead Rex. So thanks once again, David, for sending in that review, and I look forward to hearing what you're going to come up with next month when I announce the film. And moving from one stalwart participant to another, is our good buddy Don Anelli. He says, "So I decided for this challenge to go for the one entry I was least familiar with, and that's Book of Blood. This had a lot of potential, but ultimately it really let itself down with several really big flaws. The biggest blunder comes in the first minutes of the film, where it gives away the secret right away, so it's not exactly a surprise when it happens in the film. Too right, Don. And it builds up to something that's already known. Also, the film is incredibly long. Running time leaves a lot to be desired, as this is what as this one has a lot of useless running time that could have been trimmed without losing anything of importance. And there are several plot lines that could have been benefit greatly from this due to its removal or trimming done. Still, the main theme of what's going on in the film, the outstanding, if limited, gore effects, to realise them, and rather intense last half, where it's confined in a large gothic mansion, really bring this one up a notch. Not too bad, could use some more work to fulfil its full potential. I'm hard-pressed to go between a 3 and a 3.5 on the Netflix scale, so I officially think the flaws are enough to leave it at a 3. Thank you very much for that, Don. So yeah, Book of Blood's a really weird one in that it was rushed into production pretty quick. I think it'd been gestating for a while, but it kind of got greenlit off the back of the success of Midnight Meat Train with Vinnie Jones. And a lot of it is shot in Edinburgh. In fact, a lot of it was shot, particularly the kind of exterior of the house, in a street in Edinburgh, which I have been on many, many times. I walked past that building many, many, many times. Yeah, I'm with you on this one. I think because they focus kind of more on the kind of Lincoln story of the Book of Blood as opposed to the actual short works which were labelled under Books of Blood, I think they do drag it out quite a bit for what is ostensibly a short story. And yeah, it does get going, but it takes far too long to get going, and you could easily trim this movie down and not affect any single aspect in this movie. It would, if anything, the improved running time would definitely make it a better watch. As always, thank you very much for participating, Don. I'd love to hear your thoughts, and I look forward to your submission next month, buddy. And up next, swinging in his very first review for Movie Club, it is Marco from Who Will Survive podcast. Marco says,
"The dead have stories to tell. Don't mock them." Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Marco from the Who Will Survive horror podcast, and I chose The Book of Blood to review and possibly recommend. Real quick backstory here on The Book of Blood. Clive Barker wrote a collection of short stories entitled Books of Blood, and Book of Blood is the very first story in the collection, and it's also the catalyst that drives the further stories. So this story is pretty simple. I'll give you a brief kind of rundown here, and we'll try to be as spoiler-free as I can because there are some twists and turns at the end that are just fantastic. But anyway, so you have a paranormal author slash professor that teams up with a paranormal investigator along with one of her students who happens to be some sort of, you know, maybe a medium to talk to the dead or communicate with the dead. Their project is to go to a house that is known for its violent history and violent past. There's been murders there that took place. There's some rituals that took place there. It turns out that this house is an intersection between the living and dead planes, and the dead use the student's skin as a canvas to carve out their stories. So basically, that's the setup of this movie. There are a lot of twists and turns through the movie, which is great to watch and have it watch it, you know, unfold in front of you. The character development is very good and intense at times. The interactions between characters are just great, which does make this movie stand out, in my opinion, from other paranormal movies or ghost stories. The movie does have some violent scenes, which is really cool because it does speed up the excitement of it. There are a bunch of jump scares, which I'm not a fan of, but it kind of works in this movie. It doesn't beat you over the head with it, so it was okay. If I had to complain about anything of the movie, it is a little bit drawn out and slow at times, but I think that because this is a short story and adapted into a feature film where you have to cover, you know, 2 hours or so, it's to be expected with that, but in no way did it kill the movie. So would I recommend to watch this movie? Absolutely, 100% yes. It's graphic, it's violent, it's shot very well, it's well acted. It's a little predictable at times, but it's still fun and interesting nonetheless. So I hope that helps, and I hope everybody does go watch it. It did come out in 2009, so it's a little bit dated, but it does hold up, and this was my first time watching through. I didn't see this before, so I'm glad, and I'm actually happy that I got to partake in this and discover something new, especially in the Clive Barker world. So thank you, Duncan, for presenting this challenge. It was a great time I had. It was great doing the research on it and watching this film, and a great topic that you chose to tackle.
And thank you very much for that review, Marco. And thank you for submitting into this. It was great to hear you join Paul, who has submitted a few in the past and coming in. And once again, can't recommend your show enough. I know I've joked in the past and said the name wrong, but Who Will Survive Horror Podcast is a great fucking show on Legion. Get your ass over there and check those guys out. They've been fair hard at it now since about November, and they're putting out a lot of really cool content at the moment, a lot of interviews, which I quite like. I do enjoy that. I think it's one thing that maybe Legion Podcast Network in general should be doing more of, and I love the fact that you guys have taken the mantle and ran with that. So that's excellent. Thank you very much, Marco. Which brings us to our next review, short and sweet on this one. I love it when it's short and sweet. This one is from our good buddy Mike Mirabella. He says, "Hello again, Duncan. As a young horror fan, hearing Barker's name in the preview for Candyman immediately caught my attention, since his writing framed so much of my youth. Barker's strength is world building. The dystopian urban sprawl serves as a hellscape here. This, combined with Candyman and Helen's parallel stories, immerse the viewer until Helen herself becomes a spirit of vengeance in the bloody finish. Solid 4 stars. Due to the multifaceted nature, this film isn't an everyday watch, but it shines very brightly among 90s horror. Cheers, Mike." Thanks very much, Mike. I go higher. I'm a 5 on this one. I think it genuinely is top tier 90s horror. I think if you're doing a list of top 10 90s horror, I think easily in the top 3, Candyman has to be a consideration. I think that movie is just fucking on a completely different level. It just feels like a perfect horror movie. So yeah, I'm glad you chose that one. I thought a lot of people were going to go down the Candyman road, and I'm quite glad that they didn't. So thanks for submitting that in, Mike, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say on future reviews. And speaking of Candyman, our good buddy Tim Walker also submitted a review of Candyman. He says, "Hey Duncan and fellow Teapots people, well, I was a bit torn about which movie to review. Initially I was going to do Dread, and watching the first half of the movie I was certain it would be the pick. Then the ending happened and I was beyond disappointed. I didn't want to do a negative review if I can help it, and there was just no getting past how lame I thought the ending was. So Rawhead Rex came along, also my first watch. I dug it, it was fun. The problem was writing a review for it. It was a question of, could I write anything more than it's cheesy but fun? I don't think so. I couldn't stretch my brain to do more than that. That leaves Books of Blood, Saint Sinner and Candyman. Well, Saint Sinner was a Sci-Fi Channel film, so I suspected it's probably crap. I heard nothing good about Books of Blood, so that leaves Candyman. Well, I didn't pick Candyman to start with because it's the movie on the list that's gotten the most coverage in the horror community. However, unlike most horror fans, I'd never been too keen on it. It's clear that it's a well-made film. I would never argue with anyone on that point. I never hated it. Still, it was just never a favourite. It just didn't work for me on my first watch many years ago. I may have even used the dreaded phrase overrated at some point to describe it. So I thought a review of Candyman from me would be a little different at least. It couldn't be too negative, but it may not be fawning with praise either. It's also a movie that I've been wanting to rewatch to see if my opinion would change, and the Teapots Movie Club gave me an excuse, although, like I said, wasn't my first choice. So did it improve on a second watch? Well, it did to some extent. The thing I like most about Candyman is the exploration of the concept of urban legends, which is a topic I'm extremely fascinated by. For some reason on my first watch, I didn't pick up on that, or the place much value in it either. Maybe I just wasn't as into urban legends or myths back then. I guess I used to think they were silly or childish, and now I just focus on how stories are spread and why people believe them or not. Candyman excels at getting to the heart of urban legends and myths and the power that they can have over people. Another thing Candyman has got going for it is almost no one can argue against the great score by Philip Glass. As a classical orchestral scores are concerned, it's one of the best in the horror film history. Totally agree with you on this one, Tim. Some of the positives that are also to be considered are the atmosphere, and that goes well with the cinematography. Outstanding all round. It feels both realistic and like a dark fairy tale at the same time, and that's hard to do. The acting, at least from the two main leads, Virginia Madsen and Tony Todd, are excellent as well. Maybe the best in each other's careers. Potential negatives? Well, I feel that the overall story is a bit predictable. Once Helen starts seeing Candyman, I could see where it was going. Now, that may not be a big deal. I love plenty of predictable movies, and to be fair, there are a few twists and turns I didn't see coming. Some of the supporting actors were really not that good, but since Madsen and Todd are the focus of the film, it's not that big a deal. Another potential negative is that Candyman actually isn't in that many scenes when you think about it, but that also may not mean too much. Christopher Lee in the original Hammer version of Dracula wasn't in very many scenes, and there's probably many, many more examples of movies that have a great villain that doesn't appear on screen that much, and it doesn't diminish from the impact of the movie. It may in fact help to keep the villain creature unseen for most of the movie to show at the end. The xenomorph alien in the original Alien comes to mind. Why I didn't like Candyman when I first saw it, which I believe was sometime in the early 2000s, I think comes down to expectations. They were too high going in on my first watch. Maybe I also thought it would be more of a slasher film, and it really isn't, despite having a great boogeyman. The predictability may have bothered me more back then as well. Overall, I'm counting this one as a win. I've been wanting to re-watch Candyman for years because it bugged me why I didn't like this movie and everyone else did. And you know, I probably still don't like it as much as most horror fans, but now I do like it. It's okay to change your mind, folks. Give a movie a second chance. For those who don't like it, Rawhead Rex, give it another chance. Just saying. Take care, Duncan. Tim. Thanks very much for that, Tim. That's a great review. I like adore Candyman. I'm one of these ones that probably adds to that overrated status that some people that don't get into the film as much as I do experience, but the fact that you sat down, you watched it, and you dug it more, I think our tastes all change the older we get. I know that when I was a bit younger, even in my teens and early 20s, I wasn't as much a fan of filmmakers like Fulci or Argento back then as I am now. It's something that I've grown into. I remember seeing some Argento movies, some of these, like things like Inferno, for example. When I saw that at age 20 something, it didn't have the impact that I had when I saw it in my early 30s, where I was like, this is a masterclass in surrealist dreamlike cinema. Back when I saw it the first time, I was like, that, this is no narrative plot at all. I've not a fucking clue what's going on. I just couldn't get behind it as much as I could later on. And I think that just goes with life experiences, like you say, and how people's tastes change over time. We all have nostalgia which grips us to certain movies, but a lot of those movies we don't necessarily revisit again for fear that the nostalgia bubble may be popped. And that's why Baz V Horror is a great experiment on Podcasts Under the Stairs, of someone coming in without that nostalgic bias, and really putting like us to test as well as himself. We have to look at yourself in the mirror afterwards and go, well, is that movie as good as I say it is, or am I just leaning too much into that nostalgia? So yeah, thank you very much for checking that out. Always great to hear from you, Tim, and like I've been saying to everyone, I can't wait to hear what you come up with next. Which brings us to our final review of the episode, and in what has become a tradition on these listener review Teapots Movie Club episodes, we finish out with Lee Russell, our good buddy from the Must Be Destroyed On Site podcast. Lee like submitted his super quick this time, so much so that I actually had wondered if Lee had forgotten where the entry date was from the previous month and shoved it in late, forgetting that he was on the previous episode. I think to date Lee hasn't missed any, very much like our buddy Don and Ellie. You know, these guys are constantly submitting their reviews in every single month, and it's always a joy to get his ones, because what I like about Lee is he's not from a horror podcast, and you know, he really does genuinely have a love for like all facets of cinema, a lot like myself. It's always great to hear him come down with that that kind of point of view of, right, speaking as just like a movie fan here and not a horror fan, what do I actually think of this? And I sometimes think that that angle is refreshing from a position of, especially when we're doing like the foreign horror films, a lot of which he's maybe not seen yet. Or when it comes to classic horror movies, is like, when I say classics, I mean like a Hellraiser or something like that, as you will hear in his review, is like that, not so keen. So he did Candyman as well, and his review is all sorts of awesome. So let's listen to what Lee said about Candyman.
Hello Duncan, hello Movie Club, Lee back for another edition of Movie Club, and we're talking Clive Barker films this time out, and specifically Clive Barker films that he did not direct, just stuff that was adapted by it from his work. So that's cool. That means I don't have to talk about Nightbreed, which I don't like. In fact, I'm not that big of a Clive Barker fan to begin with, I'll fully admit, especially when it comes to his cinematic adaptations. Outside of what I'm going to talk about here and Hellraiser, I really don't have a lot of time for his stuff. I'm just not excited by it. But we're going to be talking about Candyman from 1992, which is, of course, based on his sort of short novella, The Forbidden. This drastically changes locations from England to the U.S., changes a lot of cosmetic details, the race of the titular Candyman, changes some names around and some story details. But I think this is the best adaptation of his work, and it's probably the one that does a better job than his story actually does as well. I think this is one of the greatest horror movies of the 1990s, and for some people that'd be not saying a lot, because I think there's a general consensus that the 1990s were not necessarily the greatest decade for horror, but I think if you look a little closer, there's a surprising amount of strong stuff in here. I think this sits up as one of the greatest of the 1990s, and not only that, I think if I was to do like a top 100 list of horror movies, this would be ranking fairly high up in that as well. I mean, other stuff in the 1990s that you had that I think this sits shoulder to shoulder with, stuff like Exorcist 3, Ravenous, Blair Witch Project, Perfect Blue, Jacob's Ladder, Audition, Silence of the Lambs, Lost Highway, In the Mouth of Madness, stuff like that. Notice I didn't say Scream, because I don't like Scream either. I'm not a contrarian, I just don't like Scream, and I don't like Nightbreed all that much. So, there we go. You guys can yell at me for that one if you want. I think this is not only one of the best and one of the more warmly regarded horror movies of the 1990s, but I think even people who are fans of it fall into the category of being people who misunderstand what this movie is, actually. I see a lot of people say it's a slasher film. It is not a slasher film. The sequels were slasher films, and they bastardized the original intent of the original film and the source material. The original Candyman is not a slasher film at all. At the very most, it's kind of a ghost story, but it's not even really that. And I'll get into that a little bit more here. This is one of the best films to ever sort of capitalize on the urban legend idea. It incorporates a couple urban legends into the creation of the Candyman itself, visually and gimmick-wise. The saying his name five times in the mirror to summon him, that's the Bloody Mary gimmick. Hook on the hand, that can be traced back to the hook on Lover's Lane kind of idea. This sort of the iconography of a hook on a hand. So that's all cool stuff. And I think what a lot of people don't understand is what Candyman really is. Candyman is not a slasher villain. He's not a ghost seeking revenge. Well, he is in a way, but he's not, because the Candyman is actually a tulpa. He's a thought form from, I guess, Tibetan or some sort of Hindu. I can't remember right off the bat which religion it's sort of originates from, but Eastern mysticism at the very least. The idea is that he is created solely by the belief of a collective amount of people, the actual sort of psychic energy that goes into believing so hard in something is what actually created the Candyman. Now, there is a Candyman backstory that's presented in the film that is just an urban legend, as far as I'm concerned. It might be based in a little bit of truth as far as the context of the story goes, but for the most part, it's stuff that's been changed over the years, over and over again, retold over and over again within the world or the universe of that film. And the Candyman is just the end result of that. He is the manifestation of that urban legend. He is a tulpa created by the beliefs and the fears of the people in the Caprini Green project housing. So Virginia Madsen's character essentially exposes that he is a fraud, that he is not real to a lot of people in Caprini Green. When she has the encounter with the guy who's taking the Candyman moniker, the gang member, when he goes to jail and people realize he was the guy committing the murders, Candyman suddenly doesn't exist anymore, or he's starting to weaken enough that the Candyman himself has to step forward and try to re-solidify his legend and the mythology around him. Otherwise, he would eventually just vanish and disappear. That's why he is stalking Virginia Madsen's character. That's why he is doing all these things. He's not doing it because of revenge or anything like that, because he never actually really existed before he was manifested by the beliefs of the people in Caprini Green. It touches on social issues. You've got the sort of project housing ghetto idea. You've got the class and race issues. It treats it with respect. It doesn't go too deep into it, but it's still there. You have the beautiful fucking Philip Glass score, which is haunting and just sticks in the back of my mind every time I watch this. And then I hear it as like an earworm for, you know, a week afterwards. Like, after rewatching this for this, I still hear it. I still hear the little piano melody going on, the church organ, the choir. It's all there. The chorus or choir or whatever it is. But yeah, I think this movie improves on the source material tenfold. It fully realizes the ideas, and a sequel never needed to be made. This movie's kind of perfect within itself. Virginia Madsen's character in the end becomes the new legend. She dies. She doesn't come back. She is just another tulpa. She's just a manifestation. She's not the real character. That person dies, but from her death comes the new legend, comes the new candy man, candy person, I guess you'd say in these days. But this is a fantastic film. It's fully realized. The story is perfect. The acting is excellent. The casting is superb. Tony Todd, his most iconic role, of course. He's just incredibly intimidating and interesting. The design with him, all the different things in his legend that sort of manifest out of his being, that are all sort of parts of him, all the different stories that have sort of built upon the central myth over the years. You know, stump for a hand, hook on the stump, bees, all that stuff, all created by the beliefs and the stories of the people in Caprini Green. And he is the horrific manifestation of that, the horrific manifestation of racial inequality, injustice. In an ironic way, it is a kind of a revenge. I don't want to get too deep into it. I love this film. I want to save it at some point for an actual podcast episode, maybe on my own podcast or something, but this is great. So yeah, if you hadn't guessed, 5 out of 5 on the old Netflix scale here. This is my favorite Clive Barker adaptation, and it's a great, great film, and I look forward to seeing what everyone else adds to this. All right, guys, see you next movie club.
And there you go, yeah. I couldn't have said it better myself, Lee. Just like, you are literally the echo chamber for all my thoughts on Candyman. Okay, that's all our listener reviews in for this month. A huge thanks to everyone that participated. Next month is going to be a little bit more kind of stripped back. One movie. Potentially one. I've got 2 or 3 in mind, but I think we're going to go for one which is a bit more obscure, and we'll see where things go with that. It could be a ton of fun. As always, I love doing these episodes. So I'm going to take my final break of the show. When I come back, I'm closing out, and I'm doing it right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been bonus episode number 77. It's been Challenge Teapots April 2018, the Movie Club Listener Reviews, where we've been looking at Clive Barker written but not directed movies. Whew, we had a good spread there, a couple of Rawhead wrecks, a little bit of Book of Blood, and some Candyman. And it makes me very happy. Thank you very much for everyone that participated in that one. Like I say, turnout a bit lower this month, but we can't have, you know, 10 to 15 reviews every month. That'd just be cray-cray. And yeah, it was a bit more obscure, but I kind of loved it. And I think it's a perfect setup to what you will experience in a couple of weeks' time when The Baz faces off against Hellraiser, Nightbreed, and Lords of Illusion. Yeah, it's going to be a triple bill of Clive Barker-directed goodies with The Baz in the hot seat tackling them for review. So yeah, thank you very much for that. Like I said at the start, we are in the middle of another three-episode week. Tons of podcasts under the stairs coming your way. We will return on Sunday with a review of A Quiet Place. And then on Monday, we come back with a standard Teapots episode. One movie reviewed on that show. But there's going to be a whole lot of banter and a whole lot of chatting as I officially introduce you to Liam Rafferty from Scott and Liam versus Evil. We're going to be discussing Baskin, which is a grubby, mucky little movie that I'm very much looking forward to getting a chance to talk about. It's finally been released in the UK on Blu-ray by Severin. So yeah, awesome. Can't wait for that. And then on Thursday, a week today, we will be dropping a bonus episode reviewing Truth or Dare, the most recent Blumhouse cinematic horror experience. And then on Sunday, that's a week on Sunday, ladies and gents, we will be doing disc number 6, an 80 Films Italian Collection movie review series, Lamberto Bava's A Blade in the Dark. It's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. As always, there's a multitude of ways to check out the podcast Under the Stairs. I prefer that you check us out on Apple Podcasts. It's easy to follow us over there. Just come across, subscribe to the feed. That way you get the episodes as and when they drop. Access to the entire back catalogue of Teapots content. Super, super, super easy. Also, you can leave us a little rating and a review. Now, ratings, super important. 5 stars, for example, the more of them we get, the higher up the iTunes charts we appear and in searches. So anyone looking for a brand new horror podcast to listen to, we get some more of those 5 stars, our show will pop up quicker in their searches. That's pretty cool. Reviews, also important. They take seconds for you to do. Don't cost you anything. Mean the world to us, and they will let new listeners know exactly why you listen to podcasts Under the Stairs. You never know. Someone might be on the fence, read that, and then come across and check it out. Spreading the name of the podcast is never a bad thing. And do it by word of mouth. You've got a friend that listens to podcasts, someone that's looking for a podcast, or someone that has a podcast app that is, you know, tired of listening to reruns of Serial, then why not swing a little bit of Teapots on that, introduce some to the wacky world of Baz V Horror. We have a show for almost everyone now, so yeah, please put that out there. Also want to say a huge thanks for everyone that gave me all the kind words in my In Reverence episode, which dropped on Monday, doing Pieces, a movie that I will legitimately never get tired of talking about. It's exactly what it says it is, ladies and gents. Exactly what it says it is. You can check out the podcast Under the Stairs on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Google Play, and the TuneIn app. Come across and visit our website, teapotscast.com. You can click the merch tab there to take you to our merch website, or go directly to that by going to teapotscast.bigcartel.com. We have 10 teapugs enamel pins. That is a tongue twister to say. We have 10 of them left, and when they're gone, they're gone. And we're down to about 25% of stock on our Void posters and Baz V Horror posters as well. So yeah, things are looking a bit sparse here, which means I'm going to have to get the finger out and start designing some new merch ideas for you people to help support what we do Under the Stairs. Come across to our Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/teapotscast. It's a fantastic community of like-minded horror people who are all nice to each other, which is a rarity on Facebook, but enjoy just having the laugh and the bants. It's a pocket full of bants over on that Facebook group page. Interact with the Baz on the twin prongs of social media sexiness, Instagram and Twitter. Both can be followed by going to @teapotcast. Right, ladies and gents, I am out of here. I hope you have a fantastic Thursday, wherever you are, at whatever the time zone is, and whatever you're up to in this big bad world of ours. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from under the stairs, and I'm signing off. It's all on illusion.